to Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. Welcome. So, Karen.
Yes.
Good evening. How's your puppy dogs doing? They were like really starting to just completely lose their shit before we went on air.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, my husband decided to, I can't use that word. I can't use that one. Screw around with our network in the house. Mm-hmm. And apparently the only place that I can communicate on Skype right now is in the living room, where the dogs can pretty much lose their shit all the time. So if you hear dogs barking, I'm just going to apologize in advance. I am so sorry. Blame my husband.
Well, I mean, everybody blames the husband anyway, so it's, you know, it's perfectly fine.
See, there you go.
So, from what I understand, you know, I missed a good show last week, although I took the day off to spend some time with the fam, because, you know, we need to do that every once in a while. But I guess you guys had a really good show last week. I'm sorry that I missed out.
Yeah, we had a good time. We missed you, of course. And, you know, William agreed to come on at the last minute, and he sort of covered us because we needed a guest for the first hour. And he, you know, got so little out because people kept him so busy with questions.
Right.
That we thought we'd have him come back this week, and he was just going to come back for an hour, but then something happened with our first hour guest, because William was going to come back for the second hour, so we have William Becker for the whole show again tonight, and I, for one, am very happy about that.
I love talking to William. I mean, I've never worked with him, but, you know, if you say the guy is totally legit as a spiritual or psychic medium,
yes.
And I have no problem whatsoever believing that. Believing you, believing him. There's no reason to lie about something like that. But you know what? Actually, I was talking to somebody recently through Facebook, and I guess that there is starting to become a change in the way that the paranormal is done. For the longest time, it was like, oh, no, we don't want to work with psychics. Forget that. No, they're all fake. But it seems that certain groups are now beginning to turn back to what it was, and that was, you know, the use of, you know, psychic investigators as a tool.
Yes, I'm a tool. No way. You're here first, folks. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. I think that what you're seeing, though, is that there's a real divide right now. I think that there are people who have always worked with psychics as part of their team, and mm-hmm. kudos to them. But I think that they've been kind of quiet about it for a while.
True.
Because there's been sort of this backlash against, we don't like psychics, we don't like mediums. Well, I was having a conversation with somebody just yesterday, and he asked me, he was saying, well, tell me what you do when you do a paranormal investigation. And I said, do you want to know what my team does, or do you want to know what I do? Because they're two very different things.
Sure.
And of course, you know, I take two things with me, actually, a flashlight,
mm-hmm.
And a voice recorder, and then the rest is me. That doesn't mean that we don't have other people on our team who are documenting things as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I guess I take three things, because I also take a pad and a pen.
Yeah.
So what I do is I am there for my impressions. And, you know, then when I get names and get places and get that kind of information, then I
sure.
go back later and research it with the history of the property and find out that, yeah, that's actually, I'm getting pretty accurate information. So as a result, I trust the information that I get more. And mm-hmm. so when I do paranormal investigation, I pretty much do it with my spidey sense and not my, you know, we have other people who do the other stuff.
Well, see, now that's just the thing. Now, it's so funny that you say pad and paper, because that was my first few investigations where it was just me and a pad, you know, a pad of paper and a pen. But I really honestly do think that it's time to bring these folks back into the fold, because personally, me, I will not conduct an investigation without the impressions of a medium. And the medium that I work with is a very close friend of my entire family. And I think that something was that's been misinterpreted. I think that people are like, well, no, because you can't really use that as evidence. It was the impressions of a psychic medium were never meant to be used as evidence. It was meant as a way to proceed in the investigation.
Yes.
And yeah, and I think that's where people have kind of messed up. But you know what? We're gonna talk to William a little bit about that, because I'm always interested to know how a person that has these spiritual gifts feel about, you know, the way that they've pretty much been left out over the last few years.
Yeah, well, I will tell you that I have, been in places where on investigations with people where they say, no psychics, we don't believe in psychics, we know psychics. And that's fine. I can walk around and wave an EMF meter and pretend that I don't get any information. Mm-hmm. I can do that, but it's kind of like having me investigate wearing a blindfold.
Exactly. You know, and it's like I was telling somebody recently, you can fake a picture, you can fake a video, you can fake a voice recording, you can fake
I can
pretty
fake
much
all
anything.
Kinds. I can, Rick, you're right.
Exactly. No, but the point that I'm getting at is that if you have a really good, as I like to call it, my finely attenuated bullshit-o-meter, when I'm working with somebody who claims to be psychic, you can tell, because it's like you can't fake that kind of emotion.
Right.
Just like you can't fake your hair standing on end or the goosebumps that you get. You can't fake that. That is a human response to a given stimuli. And that's how it is with psychics, I believe, as well. There is a given stimuli, and that's a very human response. There's not necessarily have to be anything spiritual about it. This could be something that's part of evolution.
Yes. Well, and the other thing is that I think that people that I think you're right. It is part of evolution. I think everybody has it, and it's whether you choose to tune into it or not.
Correct.
And I found that tuning into my spidey sense, as I call it, actually is pretty accurate. Like I say, because I go back and research, I find the names, I find the jobs, I find I find the information I get. And
sure.
Elaine from Whoopi and I did this at the Klondike down in St. Helens, Oregon. And she and I both, we got several names and things. And then we went and we did the research and we found those people.
See, now, isn't that like amazing? That is such incredible validation of, and I know, Karen, that you struggled with it for a really long time.
I still do.
You still do. Mm-hmm. But isn't that an incredible validation for you that it's like, wow, these abilities that I possess are real and I'm going to use them so much more.
Yeah, exactly. And so I do use them more now. I tend to trust them because the information, I'll tell you, I was having a conversation with somebody last week. It was a friend of mine. She texted me. She said, oh my God, I just heard footsteps downstairs really loud. I ran downstairs. The dogs were freaking out. I grabbed a gun. I thought that there was somebody in my house, blah, 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 right?
Right.
And she said, I got down there. There was nobody there. And so I just kind of closed my eyes for a minute. And I said, has this family member of yours died? And she said, yes. And I started describing him. And everything I was describing was right, except he kept showing me this huge mustache.
Okay.
And it entered into my head, porn stash. But I thought, this is the poor woman's dead relative. I'm not going to say porn stash to her, right? And so I said, did he have a mustache? And she said, no. I was like, okay. And so I kept talking to her, and everything else was right, and everything else was valid. And finally I said, he keeps showing me the mustache. I said, but it's like a great big huge porn stash. And she started laughing. And she said, that's because he always joked that if his hair was as thick as mine, he would rock a big porn stash.
What? And there's just no way you could have possibly have known that. There's just no way. So
no, and porn stash was the word, and I wasn't going to use it because it was disrespectful. So that's something that William always talks about, and we can, when we call him in a minute or two, he can tell you about some of his experiences with this, is that sometimes when you see something that's really weird or unusual, like porn stash, you need to say that, because that's going to be that one thing that's incredibly validating for the other person.
Sure. I mean, it's going to, like with your friend, it was something that clicked immediately. There was no way that you could have possibly known about the porn stash. And, you know, might I say, that's incredibly hilarious as well.
I know. But,
but yeah, it's an amazing validation. And let's face it, up until about 2003, 2004, whatever, it was the norm using psychic mediums in your research as well as your investigation. Hans Holzer did it. Harry Price did it. Brad Steiger did it. All the fathers and godfathers of what we do. And by fathers, I don't mean two plumbers from Rhode Island and a wedding DJ from New Jersey or wherever the hell he is from. Not New Jersey, Nevada. You know, this is the way that things have been done for 130 years. It was the accepted paradigm. So
yes.
Hopefully we're getting back to that.
And you said something, I believe you said it off air, you may have said it on air, so I'm sorry to everybody who's listening that we repeated it, but I think it was off air. You said it's like you've taken the spiritual out of this whole thing, the spirit out of paranormal investigation, and we're, you know, we need to, I think if we are so tied up in measuring and documenting, and those things are wonderful for people who are skeptics, but once you get beyond skeptic and you know that there's something there, I think then that we need to find the spiritual reason that we do what we do, and we need to figure out what we can do for the people that are maybe they're communicating with me for a reason. And so, you know, the next step, I think, is that, okay, we've got it documented. We know that these things are going on. We're never going to convince the skeptics. They're going to have their own experiences. They're going to have to seek out their own experiences. True. And I think our next step is figuring out what the heck to do to help these essentially human souls, because they're contacting us for a reason.
Yes.
So...
And I think we can, right, and I think we can do it without walking into the building and yelling swear words and, you know, demands and stuff like that. Get the hell out of here, you piece of shit. It's like, that is just, you know, when I look at that, that is so unacceptable, because first off, you don't know who you're talking to. If you're talking to somebody from the Victorian era, they're not going to know how to respond to that. They're going to run and hide. And if you happen to be talking to a child spirit, you know what? Shame on you. Because that's a child. That's abuse, even if they are already dead. So that's all I got to say about that. So
that's
what do you think about taking a break?
Okay, and like maybe calling William while we're on break?
Yes.
That sounds good, because William will be very much part of this conversation. He has a lot to contribute. So let's do this. We'll go to break. When we come back, we will be talking to William Becker from Para Insights and... you know, from all over the place, also Northwest Ghost Tours. So stick around, Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Break in the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit aninpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale. Before we introduce our guests, I just have this to say. What was up with that music? It's not
Christmas
time.
Sorry.
So, No, but anyways, tonight joining us, again, he was on last week and he's been on before, so this is now he is an official frequent flyer of Paranormal Underground Radio. We have psychic medium, psychical researcher and investigator, as well as a tour guide. What was the name of your tour company again, William?
Northwest Walking Tours. Northwest Ghost Tours are the particular tours that we've been doing lately, but
okay.
Either one.
So, William Becker, welcome back to the Underground.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Really appreciate it.
Sorry about that. I totally blanked on that.
So we're going to do something a little tonight. We're going to ask William. The other thing we're going to do is something we almost never do. We're going to give out our phone number because people are welcome to call in and talk to William. Here's what's going to happen. If you call, you're going to hear us talking. Don't speak until we acknowledge you. Please.
And turn down your radio.
Turn down your radio. That's right. Oh, my gosh, because there's like an 8-second delay, so we hear ourselves repeated back. It's not pretty. Okay, so our phone number is 714-646-4197. You are welcome to call in. And I know that Elaine from Whoopi was...
question in the chat room. Did you happen to catch those, William, or do you need me to scroll back and find out?
I saw them briefly and had a mild heart attack, and so probably going back to them would be great.
Okay. Oh, Cheryl has them. Okay. So, do you think that high EMF fields interfere with your abilities?
I have never thought about it, and I haven't tested it. I think that just off the top of my head, I could see where actually a high EMF, field could help power them a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know how it is when you work with somebody, well, like you and I do, and with some other people too. We're
like antennas.
Right, and we help boost each other's abilities. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking a high EMF level might have that same effect. Now, Elaine, I want to try it. I want to do some experimenting and see what happens.
Okay.
See, now, here's the funny thing with the high EMF fields. The medium that I work with, Nancy Laporta, if she could levitate, she would be Daniel Douglas Hume. But if I hold, you know, even so much as a magnet towards her when she's, like, on the set and doing her thing, that compass will move around as well as a high EMF field will just shoot off of her. I mean, I can't even come within 5 feet of her with an EMF detector. Amazing.
You have never seen me with dowsing rods, Rick. If I hold dowsing rods, they just spin.
Really? I've never used those before.
Yeah, when I hold them in my hand, they just spin like crazy.
Okay.
So
I haven't tried those before. Boy, I'm getting jealous. I don't think I have that. I haven't noticed that with EMF detectors, or I haven't worked with dowsing rods. Now I'm going to have to try it. That would be cool.
Well, I have some dowsing rods, so when we do our next investigation together, I'll bring them and you can play with them.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, very good. Okay, so the next question that Elaine had is that she wanted to know, when entities communicate with you and they say something emotional, do you get sucked in emotionally? And if you don't, how do you avoid that?
I get sucked in emotionally like I would be talking to anybody else with an emotional story. It can be very captivating. It can, you know, I've been sitting there bawling my eyes out along with the entity at times. Mm-hmm. But it's the same way I would feel talking to one of you probably. I open up maybe a little bit more that way because I might feel it a little bit more deeply. Mm-hmm. Because it's a different part of me that's talking to a different part of the entity. But I don't feel like it's an empathic feeling, if that's what she's trying to get to. It's more the telepathy feeling.
But empathy, I mean, because when you talk to somebody who has a sad story, you do have empathy. If you and I are sitting and talking and I'm telling you the sad, sad story of my life and I'm crying, it's not like you're going to just sit there. It's not like you're going to inappropriately giggle or something. Well, I don't know.
No, absolutely not. And you're right. But it's when I'm using the term empathy on this sense, it's not like when you're in a room and picking up everybody else's energy to a degree or something like that.
Yeah, I'm that's me. I get that.
Right. I'm not getting that sadness. Now, I can tune into something like that, but frankly, I usually have to think about it, and I don't usually want to, so I don't. Mm-hmm. So with the entities, yes, I get the stories. I get the sadness with the stories. But I usually get it through the communication with them and letting them send me whatever they want to along those lines. Not taking any more in than they want to give me. There's, you know, kind of a boundary issue sometimes. I like to make sure I don't cross them with the dead any more than I like to cross them with the living.
But now, William, do you ever worry about when you're doing your thing and you're on your set? Do you ever think about, you know, or worry about a spontaneous channel or even a? I don't like using the term possession because that just has such negative connotations. But you know, the spirit coming inside of you. Do you ever worry about that?
I never have, but I think I need to maybe pay a little bit more attention to it because twice I've had somebody tell me something like that seemed to have happened. One day on a tour, in fact, Jenny, I think it was the first time she took my downtown tour, she couldn't look at me for a while because my face changed.
I've actually seen that before.
Yeah, and she told me about this after the tour, and I don't think I noticed anything, but when I'm doing a tour, I'm focusing on the tour. You know, paranormal has pretty much hit me over the head for me to notice it when I'm focusing on all my guests and my clients and making sure that they're getting what they came there for and I've got my stories right and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And are they having fun or do I need to do it a little differently or, you know, that kind of thing. And when I was working with SSPR up on a case, we were doing an investigation. One of the people on the team said she saw that happen to me just very quickly. Something came in.
Yeah, she mentioned that to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so,
is that scary for you?
No, partly because I don't think they'd stick around, and they didn't stay long. They flashed in and out, and so either there's something in me that's working on protecting me, or I don't know enough about what happened to me in those two times to really be scared. I feel pretty confident in my ability to ward off anything that kind of comes my way, which maybe is being a little bit too overly confident. But it's an area I'd like to study more about. I don't want to do that kind of physical channeling. It's very hard on the body. It's hard on all kinds of things for us. And it's not good for people's health and everything else. So I don't want to make a practice of that anyway, but I would like to do a little bit more research into it and what it's all about. And if there are rare times where maybe it would be helpful, but also know how to protect against it more. So I don't have to fight it after the fact. I can keep it at bay more to begin with.
Now, do you have a spirit guide or guides, and are they part of that protection?
I have a guide at the Acacia Record that I work with. His name's Robert.
Okay.
And he actually is quite happy to have his name mentioned, which is nice.
Well, hey, Robert, how you doing?
Everyone has a guide, Rick.
And, we all do have guides up there. I haven't noticed or directly contacted a spirit guide or a guide that I work with here directly.
Okay.
I'm not saying that there isn't somebody there, but it's not a practice I have to work with somebody that way. I'm open to meeting them if they are there.
Sure.
But they just haven't been my experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Elaine had one more question, and she wanted to know... I know about this a little bit. Is it okay if there are several sensitives in one home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you do know about that a little bit. I think it can be great fun. Part of the thing would maybe be to help respect each other a little bit, know what each other is able to do. And I know in this case people do respect each other, but I mean respect each other's space by knowing a little bit about what each other can do that can help.
Yeah.
And sometimes work together because you can amplify the abilities sometimes, or if it's confusing, you know, I talk a lot about building shields and filters and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're living with somebody and that's, you're constantly bumping into each other, shielding gets to be a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And it can also kind of wear everybody down. And if you just let the energy pass through and don't grab onto it, it may help. This is actually something I learned more about in Ellen's class last weekend. Just don't block it in a case like this where you're always around it. Don't tune into it. Just let it go.
Yeah, I think that you sort of, if it's your family, and it's somebody that you've been around for a long time, like my mm-hmm. son hates it when I tell people this, but he's sensitive as well. And I know that I have known his energy since before he was born. As a matter of fact, I've probably known his energy through every lifetime and in between. And so with him, it's nothing. You know, it's right. just, I don't even notice it, but we had another young man who was living with us for a while. And he was sensitive as well. And I did have to learn to just sort of let his, because I was noticing that when he was home, when he was here, I was really, really tired.
Right.
So kind of like a psychic.
And part of that might have been your aunt. I'm sorry,
part of that might have been what?
I was saying like a psychic vampire.
He wasn't a psychic vampire. It's he had psychic abilities too. And I put up because I have spirits who would be trying to talk to me constantly if mm-hmm. I wasn't blocked off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have this, I put up a wall to block out energy of people that aren't familiar.
You know what? I'm sorry for using that term. I hate terms like that, but I couldn't think of anything at the time to like maybe he is, you know, using your energy, you know, inadvertently.
The term psychic vampire is an acknowledged term that's used by a lot of people that I've learned from.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually talked about at the Haunting for Hope. Joe Teeples mm-hmm. in his presentation talked about it. I know what you mean. I'm a little concerned about terms that sound prejudicial, it is a term that is used out there. And with this young man, too, he had a lot going on in his life, and he's a wonderful guy, and it could be you're so emphatic that you might be picking up on a little of that, too, and it might have made you tired.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I do, whenever I go and spend time around crowds, I wind up with a migraine after a couple hours because it's just that much work. I went and had a past life regression hypnotherapy session yesterday, and mm-hmm. I had a migraine this morning. I woke up with a migraine this morning, and I know it's just because of all of the kind of psychic information and that was there being processed as well.
Right.
So,
now, do you remember what happens during that, or do they?
I do, I do. We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I wasn't going to pry on it right now. I'm fascinated by the process.
I know. Well, so my next step is the life. This was the past life regression hypnotherapy. The next one's going to be life between lives. So that's where they take me and they kill me off. And then I leave my body and go up and find out what happens when I'm not incarnated in human form.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm really looking forward to hearing about that one. Yeah,
I know. I'm really excited about that. So that's about a month away because it's a little expensive. Got to save up some De Niro for that one. But anyway, that's not why we're here. That's
some Robert De Niro.
Yes. So you took Ellen's class. You took Ellen's class this last weekend.
Right.
And Ellen Allmendinger. Do you remember Ellen, Rick? She's been on our.
Yes, I remember Ellen. I liked Ellen very much. Wasn't she the one that we kind of sort of outed on the show, though.
Yeah, so now she's teaching classes. She has, it's called Third Eye, as in the letter I. Third Eye Access, I think, is what it's called. And she's teaching classes, and William took the class this weekend. And William, is it stuff like astral projection and that type of thing?
What she worked on this one, on this time, was mostly, it was some chakra work, and because she does see astral and ethereal travel as well, but it was working more with our auras.
Okay.
And controlling them, bringing them in, where to register them, how to feel them with other people. It was a 3-hour class that just flew by, you know, between the two different parts to it.
And you were noticing a couple weeks ago when we went up to Fort Steilacoom, you were noticing that you could see auras because you were telling me what color mine was. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I tend to do it fairly much psychically. That's why I could tell you what they look like without looking at you and the other person in the backseat.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easier actually psychically than looking. Sometimes the physical visual can be distracting. Like I'm not looking at the chat box, because if I was following what people were typing, you would not have anyone even remotely coherent on the phone right now. So
I hear that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, you got Sierra here. Yeah. I was sorry, William. I was just saying you got Sierra here in the chat room, and she always has the most amazing graphics. And right now, Sierra is just giving me a headache.
I know. I had to click out of the chat room because they were just a little bright. They were a little vivid for me. So if you're talking to me in the chat room, I'm not there. So you liked Ellen's class, and she teaches those in the Pacific Northwest, in Yakima and Oregon City and places like that. So,
right. She's kind of like, we'll go on the road pretty much anywhere where there's enough interest that makes it economically viable. And with gas at over $4 a gallon, and if you go too far away, you have to spend the night and meals out and all that kind of stuff. But her classes are excellent, and we are working on trying to get a workshop together, a joint workshop for a weekend, probably in September. Details aren't ironed out and such yet, but we're working on it.
Okay.
So let's talk about your classes, and I know we've touched on them briefly, and I've been in your class many times, of course, and always appreciate them. But why don't you share with our listeners maybe just a taste of some of the information that you provide in the class? Because I think you are like me. Don't you believe that everybody can have psychic abilities?
Oh, I do. And that was part of what I was excited hearing about your conversation, you know, earlier when you were doing the intros and first part of the show. Is I think it probably isn't, I don't know if it's evolutionary or if it's part of our connections just with other spirits or souls or wherever, but I think it is part of how we're all hardwired.
Yes.
And we live in a society and in a culture, and most people do, that tend to block that off, either through direct stigma or just clutter with everything else that goes on in life.
Well, okay, and now, Bill, you or William, I'm sorry, I called you Bill. Sorry about that. You said about the word clutter. I've always kind of believed that we were chatting once a couple weeks ago about why we don't see somebody with, say, the talents of a Daniel Dunglass Hume or a Eusebia Palladino these days. And I personally feel it's because we have all this clutter that's going around.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just going to say.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That really would make a lot of sense, because you have to have time to have, and I don't want to sound like some big spiritual guru, I'm not, but you have to have time to sit with yourself a little bit. You have to have time, and on a fairly regular basis, to work with your own energy a little bit. And I don't mean practice doing things, but to recognize it, to know about. You have to have time to go in enough to find that place inside of each of us where we tune into all of this knowledge. And we live in a culture, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but we have, I think even adults are down to, what, 7-minute attention spans? Because on the average, because of all the sound bites out there, in children it's even lower.
Yeah.
And it makes it very difficult to allow all this stuff to come through. Well, I get chatting or I do this or that, and I have to stop and say, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, let's tune into the unseenness here.
I'm sorry. I'm going to mute for a minute. Sorry about that, guys.
Okay. No problem.
Oh, no problem.
So, it just honestly seems like, we were talking earlier about the high EMF fields. I just think that there's just so much radio signals flying through the air, television signals, all this stuff. I can see how that would seriously, squelch somebody, because let's face it, you're talking about the attention span these days.
Yeah,
I'm going to be honest. I'm the average American. I can't sit still for more than 7 seconds.
That's not true, because you have a spiritual practice, and I know that you follow it.
Well, with that I do, yes. But otherwise, it's like I'm like watching YouTube or whatever, and I'm pretty much addicted to YouTube. I can't sit here and watch a video that's any longer than like 10 minutes. You know what
I'm
saying?
No, I understand what you're saying, but there are things that you can do. And William, I hope you don't mind. I'm hijacking you here. But I think there are things that you can do to tune in. Like yesterday, before I had this past life regression, there are all sorts of things that I could have been doing. I could have been working. I could have been texting. I could have been watching YouTube. You know, all of those things. And instead, I'm sorry about my dogs. I chose to sit down and work on I make prayer beads, and that's one of my ways of tuning my brain out and tuning in spiritually. And so that's one of my practices, my spiritual practices that I do. And, and so for me, that was very preparatory. So even if you like to read, or if you walk, or if you sit and breathe, or if you do yoga, and I know, Rick, you meditate. Mm-hmm. I do. I meditate with mantras because that's what I have to do. because it's the only thing that quiets my brain. So there are things that you can do. And if you do them before you go out and investigate, then I think that you're bringing yourself to a different level on the investigation. And then if you pay attention to the sensations, whether it's words or feelings in your body or pictures in your head, voices or any of those things, as instead of paying attention to your EMF meter and your camera and your, then I think that it becomes a very different experience for you.
Before I go on investigation, my routine is I do a really great workout. So it's like I sweat a lot. I get rid of like some garbage that way. And then I'll meditate. And then it's like I go on. I mean, I'm not a particularly religious person, so I don't really pray or anything like that. But and it's one of those things that I feel does work for me, and it, opens me up a little bit more. And, as far as EMF detectors are concerned, I let my kid Theo play with mine, and I barely use the damn thing anymore.
Well, I've heard people talk about, who seem to know a lot about equipment and people I trust, say that a lot of these things, the readings really don't necessarily mean that much.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, I don't think you use a lot of equipment, William.
Pardon me?
I don't think I've seen you use much equipment.
I usually have a little bit with me, but I don't use it that much because it usually gets boring and it doesn't do much.
Right.
The entities, if I'm trying to... I usually have a recorder with me because for me to write down what I'm getting shifts me away from what I'm getting. It's a different focus, and it's difficult for me. I can hold a conversation physically. I don't have to. It's a mental conversation, but I can give it physically so that I can have a record that way of what's going on. Or if the team I'm with wants to hear what's going on, I can say it for them. But for me to change gears and write, I try it, but I lose a lot. EMF meters, I'll pull them out and play with them now and again, and I usually don't get too much. And it's not as big of a deal to me. It can be a little bit of an added yes or something here. I'm not crazy that I'm seeing this entity here or something, because sometimes that happens. But
yeah,
it's just, well,
what
I like conversations.
Sure.
And an EMF detector doesn't give me the same sense of a conversation.
Yes.
Now, when you have an entity, do you believe that that entity is part of the physical environment, or it is a away from it in the ether? Because you may be seeing it, but the equipment's not picking it up.
Right. There are so many different levels with this. I think they have different ways and different wavelengths. There's something coming through. It's different than when I'm traveling. If I'm doing an astral projection or an astral travel, like to the Cation records, and I never say it right. I've heard it's pronounced 15 different ways.
Yeah, me so too.
And so I say it a conglomeration of all of them, so my apologies. But looks different. And I tend to go there and bring them here. When I'm talking to entities, even remote viewing on this planet, I tend to bring it to me psychically instead of going there myself a lot. I will do some of it, but it's just easier to bring it here in a picture. So sure. There is an energetic piece of it that's still attached here. Now, sometimes the intellect with that piece, it might be bleeding through or connecting to another area as well, something not on this physical world.
Right.
But I think I'm communicating through or with part of it that is here. My philosophy is that we leave an imprint on the planet, on this field. And
sure.
I haven't run into anything, forgive me if I've said this before, but I haven't run into anything that I call a trapped or lost soul.
Right. Yeah.
What I come across, now, I have come across things that come from other places to visit and then go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my grandma will come and talk to me in a little bit more of a completeness than what I get that's just reading here. But mm-hmm. she's not trapped here by any means. She's off doing what she does, and she just pops in to say hi and see how I'm doing.
I wish I could talk to my grandmother again one more time.
I don't think anybody's ever trapped. I think that sometimes some people are still ego-identified, because I think that mm-hmm. there are two parts to us. I think that there's our soul, and I think that mm-hmm. there's our ego. And our ego is our rational mind and the thinking. It's the part of us that really is kind of the person part of us. It's our inner skeptic. It's our inner critic. It's our core beliefs about ourselves. It's the stuff that makes up our personality while we're here. And I think that ego is separate from our soul. And I think that a lot of times what you see with ghosts is that the soul, the part of the soul that's still here, is still ego identified.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory.
Right. That fits a lot with what I was talking about. It's mm-hmm. it's that part of the energy. It's not complete in depth enough for me to be a whole person, and I consider a soul to be the more complete package. It just feels different, and I think what's left is the most, I won't say important, but the part of the person that was most active in that area. We have places on the tours we talk about where people, these are mill sites, and people see men and women dressed in Victorian garb walking up and down the street. Well, there's no street there anymore, but there used to be. They're not interactive, they're not anything else. It's just that there was so much activity that is still there.
A place and memory.
Right.
There is a lot of activity. I've been on your tour, and they are there. I mean,
oh yeah,
oh yeah, they're there, and they make themselves known. Boy, mm-hmm. that tall redheaded guy that kind of walks leaning forward, whew, up by the tunnel. Yeah,
yep, that's the same one. Martina and I talked to when we took a break when the radio station was working on a tour with us, an investigation tour, and Todd and Martina Baker were part of that.
And well, he's he, Yeah, I did. But he's the redheaded guy on the tour. This is down in Oregon City, and Oregon right. City is a very haunted place. And right. But there's this tunnel that's a walking tunnel. What's it called, William? Is it?
It's just a walking tunnel.
Yeah.
It's part of the train overpass system.
Yeah,
the train is going over the highway, and it's
right,
just
and
the pedestrian part.
So there's a tunnel that you can walk through, and you come out below this great big huge cliff. Well, there's this redheaded guy that hangs out at the far end of the tunnel, and he killed himself. He threw himself off the cliff.
Just before one of my tours, too. It wasn't really nice of him.
Yeah, I mean, so he's still there. So he's yeah. recent. He wasn't that long ago.
Right. This was last year, the year before. Just, I think it was on the Friday. They found him a few hours before or a few hours after one of my tours. I can't remember which way exactly, but yeah, we
he's
missed
very
him by not
strong.
Much.
His whatever part of him is left there. He's very strong.
Now, is he an apparition, you know, meaning of they use the term intelligent haunt, or is he, you know, a place memory, a true haunting?
I haven't known anybody who's physically seen him. Have you seen him? We get the psychic impression and have the conversations with him.
Yeah, but I don't see him with my eyes.
Right. And he did leave an EVP in response to part of Martinez and my question when we were talking to him and kind of getting out of the area a little bit to give her a break.
Okay. So interactive then.
So he is interactive, yeah. Mm-hmm. But nobody has physically seen him. Now, people have seen things down there when I've been giving tours. They've often seen men standing behind me or women in, they call it Gone with the Wind dresses or something. I think they pronounced it down, which is appropriate for the time period of the town.
Okay.
So, yeah, people, I usually don't. I'm facing the wrong way.
Yeah.
They see something behind me, and that doesn't do me any good.
But, okay. Yeah. So one of the things that people ask, and I'm going to ask you this, because Rick and Cheryl were actually asking me this before the show. So when you have a conversation with somebody who's dead, how does that take place? Do you actually hear them speak? Do you just know that they've said something?
I hear them. I don't hear them with my physical ears. I don't read words, but I see the conversation. I see the words.
Okay.
Pretty much a telepathic type of a thing. I can get a sense of their voices sometimes, not always, but sometimes. Now, there are times when, you know, an apparition, an entity, does summon up the energy that we hear them with their physical ears. I mean, anybody does. You don't have to be psychic, I don't think, to have those experiences sometimes. But I hear it in my head. I guess is the best way to see it, do it.
Right.
And and it's not like pictures, like each individual word is going through. Yeah. I guess
okay.
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It,
because people are
And I see them and everything else too, but it's, you know, usually in the head, not always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's because usually I was trying to explain to Cheryl and Rick is that I feel, of course, because I've got the, you know, I get the, like the burning.
You got a spidey sense.
Yeah, but I also even like, if somebody's trying to tell me how they died, my chest will hurt. Or my head will hurt. Or I'll have a burning somewhere. I mean, so I have that. So that's kinesthetic, and I know, and that's also kinesthetic. Mm-hmm. But I do see little bits, and I do hear little bits, too.
Right. I don't have as much of the kinesthetic, you know, just the emotional piece. Now, sometimes the entities do this anyway. On this investigation tour, we took Terry Boyd and his radio crew, and actually there was a TV crew on it, too, that Todd and Martina were on. Everybody in this one area all felt something hard around their throats and pressure on their throats.
Mm-hmm.
This was before I told any of the stories or any of the history, like the mass hanging that was done there.
Right. There you go.
And everybody, and these were people who weren't, I mean, these were, some of them were friends of ours who were ghost hunters. Some of them were picked over the radio, whatever process they had. Terry Boyd's pretty big DJs around this area.
Okay.
And, you know, people with, a lot of people there that were totally skeptical. Most people would not claim to be psychic. And just about everybody there independently had that same feeling. And it fits the history of the place to a T.
That's an awfully strong imprint on an area that, I mean, that everybody feels it. But I wanted to ask you about that, William. Now, I know that with Hans Holzer, he was a big believer in that you cannot see ghosts, you know, ghosts, I mean, you know, quote unquote, without actually being psychic. Do you think that that's true, or, you know, if the time is right and you're in the right place at the right time, depending on your point of view or whatever, that you can see them?
I think you can see them. When they're putting together a physical manifestation, now it could be that you have to be a little bit more in tune to see things that are a little bit more shadowy and on the corner of the eye. But first of all, you know, everybody does have the psychic ability, I think.
Okay.
And maybe the idea is that everybody has to be psychic to see the entities, but you don't have to be consciously aware that you're psychic. That doesn't feel right to me, you know. I think, because people see things that every once in a while that they've never had the experiences before, but something just shows up.
Yeah.
And, well, an example, on one of the tours, one of my downtown Oregon City tours, Rocky was on it as well. We were in a site of an old dock area, and I was concerned because one of the guys on the tour didn't look like he was having fun, and I wasn't sure if he really wasn't or if he was just a tall, quiet type, but he looked like he was there because his wife made him be, and he'd rather be someplace else. But when we
I get
down,
that feeling too.
And when we were down in this one area, he looked up and said, "There's somebody up there watching, listening to us over who is leaning on a pipe." Rocky looked up and saw the same thing. Rocky is psychic. This guy, not a paranormal active person or anything else, he saw an apparition there that somebody else then did see. When by the time I looked up, I saw a flash of light go across. I didn't see the apparition. I've seen many apparitions up there, and with my eyes, not usually full, you know, usually the legs under the pipe or something like that, shadow people. But this is a guy that I would not say is in tune with his psychic abilities at all. And he saw this guy so much so, I always lead the way up. He wouldn't let me go up alone, because he was afraid there was somebody up there, and he was 20 years younger and taller and stronger than I was, and I, you know, appreciated that, but I knew what it was. I knew there was no living human being up there.
Yeah.
But I appreciated his thought. And we checked around, and there wasn't anybody there, and there wasn't any runway anybody could have been there or anything else. So I just don't think... One of the problems, I mean, I don't want to be diverging or off on a tangent here, so pull me in if you need to, but you were talking before about why so many times the psychics aren't included and such, and I think
that was actually going to be the next question.
Okay. Psychic, do you want me to wait? Oh, wait.
No, please, go right ahead.
Okay. Psychics, there are a lot of fakes and frauds out there.
Yes.
Or have been over the years. There are a lot of people that do it for show. It's one of many reasons why I don't charge for readings or investigations. I charge for classes. I charge for tours, but not for a reading. And there are a lot of people that are just so full of themselves as psychics. They think it's so special that you have to have this incredible gift to be able to do things that really aren't necessarily something that you have to have an incredible gift for.
Sure.
Is I think some people's egos get in the way of their definition of what is out there and how it works. And that's, you know, part of the fun about all of this is you can't prove any of it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Even with even with equipment, you can't prove that it's really a ghost or a paranormal entity.
Right.
It's unknown what made that figure show up, but, you know, it's really hard to say. But you can't prove it wrong either, and unless there's a real trickster. But our basic concepts, our basic ideas are based on experience and based on our own philosophical pattern and belief system, and kind of goes from there.
But, you know, I am starting to, and Karen and I, we were talking about this before, that there is beginning to be a change. And, Karen, what did you say, that it's not so much that that they're coming out of, is it that they're coming out of the woodwork, you think?
Who?
I'm asking both of you. Do you think that it's like people are, William, do you think that it's like people are finally starting to see that, you know, it's okay to be psychic. It's okay to use psychics, not just as your friend, but also as a tool on an investigation.
Mm-hmm. I think for some people it is. And, you know, I'm always skeptical. I'm skeptical of myself. I know I'm pretty good. But nobody's right all the time, including me or the best people out there.
Sure.
So I'm always a little skeptic when somebody just suddenly decides they're psychic, or have the abilities, but that doesn't mean they don't. I always watch. I try not to be judgmental about it. I think it's partly becoming more of a fad, and I think maybe we're going through a season where in more areas again, you know, through the 60s, 70s, even, there was, kind of giving my age out here a little bit, but there was an acceptance of alternative awarenesses, alternative consciousness, alternative religious philosophies and energy work and stuff that wasn't necessarily just tied to illegal drug use. And I think a little bit more of that acceptance is starting to come back more, and it's becoming a little bit more mainstream. And we have shows like The Medium and Ghost Whisperer and stuff on that help give a little bit more credibility to the concept. And so I think more people are willing to allow themselves to use what they have and to experiment with it.
Sure.
And I think some people just want to jump on the fad to be attention grabbers.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it's like, you know, I always say that I've, in my 20 years of actively investigating, I've probably met, you know, a few dozen people who claim to be psychic, but I've worked with only three people that I could say have a true gift of some kind. Otherwise, it's just, you're either faking it or you just don't understand what it is that you're trying to say. Usually, most of the time, it's some hot little co-ed blonde, and I'm psychic. And once you get to know her and, you know, talking to her about her abilities, it's like, no, you're really not. You're deluding yourself.
Right. And sometimes it's just plain, and this is one of the things, and again, I don't want to put down anything anybody does along these realms, but a lot of the people reading humans or fortune-telling or whatever, so much of that, if you're a good student of human behavior or just awareness, if you're a good observer, there's a lot that a person can pick up, and you don't have to be psychic.
Sure.
It can help, or it can hinder the actual real psychic ability a person might have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people have some level of ability. I think that very few people recognize it, acknowledge it, or have any clue how to interpret it or what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Or how not to interpret it sometimes.
Yeah.
One of the biggest headaches I have sometimes is trying to make something mean something when I'm better off not doing that, because I'm not the person that necessarily has to know what it means.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be some kind of symbolism that, you know, means something to somebody else. I do have a question, though, about this. My wife and I, we were watching, you know, Long Island Medium the other day.
Okay.
And, you know what? I'm not going to say that she doesn't have a gift, because, like I said before, when she's doing a reading on somebody and they're bawling their eyes out, you can't fake that. Mm-hmm. But do you think it's
necessary? No, I actually think she's legit.
Oh, no, I totally believe that she's legit.
Yeah.
I really do. But mm-hmm. my problem is like, is it really necessary to walk into a place and I'm a psychic medium, let me start doing, you know, readings on you? Do you think that there has to be a little bit more discretion with that kind of thing, William?
Oh, you know, that's a really good thing to say to me, you two, because I forget sometimes. And if people are talking about something at their house or this or that, I'll just kind of automatically jump in and start reading things. And mm-hmm. I think there probably should be more discretion. And
it can get you in trouble.
Yeah, it can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I certainly don't go around announcing, you know, meeting Joe Blow on the street and saying, "Hi, my name's William, I'm a psychic." You know, it doesn't, I've got parts of my life I keep this pretty well separated from.
Yeah. Well, and that Long Island medium, she doesn't, I think she actually hasn't set good boundaries for herself as far as filtering and, because it's everywhere she goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she probably hasn't. And, you know, the thing about any of this is it's television, and if there isn't excitement and drama or some appeal, they don't get the ratings, they don't have the show.
Right.
I've heard people talk about this with some of the other Ghost Hunter shows, and there's some out there that I really like. And some of the ones that are even pretty sensational, people that I have talked to that I know and respect who have known the individuals on these shows, said they're really pretty down to earth and even kind of shy. It's not necessarily always what they want to do, but it's what the producers want to do.
Yeah.
That's the magic word.
Yeah, and it's, I don't want to use names about anything. I don't want to give a good or bad rap to any of those shows out there. It's, they all are what they are, and like I say, there's something, I think, all the ones I've seen, I think, have something to offer at some level, to somebody. Mm-hmm. But, I'm losing my train of thought. Oh, but, you know, you were talking, too, about the big explosive, and I take this along with the whole idea you were talking about with the psychic medium. I understand getting startled, but being startled doesn't have to be words that are bleeped out.
Yeah.
None of the people I work with get startled to that degree. We're expecting something.
I did once, remember?
Yeah, Patty, you did once.
Patty happily plays it for everybody she possibly can. But uh-huh. It's because it was because I didn't think it was paranormal. I thought somebody shot at us.
Exactly.
It turned out to be paranormal, but I thought it was somebody actually shooting at us.
If you would have seen that object flying across the room, you would have responded that way.
No, absolutely.
You would have probably thanked them and, you know, been fairly cool about everything. I don't understand. If you're getting physically threatened by something, or if something physically hurts you, like a poke with a parasol or an elbow in the ribs or different things that some people I know about have had happen. You know, I can understand getting a little bit more wild up too, but to me it's all about ratings and not about the genuine what's going on.
Yeah.
And if you're that afraid of ghosts, don't go looking for them.
Exactly. You know, it's like sometimes I'll watch these shows, but I don't really watch it for the show. I'll watch it because they're going to some place that I've heard of and that it's, right. You know, I know of a place, these places that are really haunted. But my wife hates watching these shows with me because all I do the whole time in the shows, I pick apart each and everything that they do, especially Ghost Adventures. It's like, why do you have to provoke? Why do you have to use those kind of cuss words? Can't you just be nice? No wonder shit follows you home and then makes your life a living hell because you make their life a living hell. I just think that there has to be this discretion.
I agree with you. And my philosophy is I treat them the way I want to be treated or I treat anybody else, and maybe even a little bit more deference to them. And
because it's their space.
Who else is there? You may not know that there's a child entity there when you're cussing out the guy that murdered somebody or whatever, but there might be.
Yeah.
Karen will probably know. I'm pretty good at picking those up, but you know, the average ghost hunter isn't going to know this stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, but okay, I'm not going to go into a prison and start screaming at a murderer. I'm not. No. I'm going to go in and I'm going to approach him as a, you know, I can't imagine. Well, okay. So for like my guardian ad litem stuff, sometimes I have to see a parent in jail.
Right.
Because they've done something where they've wound up in jail. And I don't go in and, you scum, what are you, you know, I, you go in, even though this person has clearly done something to land their asses in jail, you still go in and approach them as a human being and have a conversation with them. I don't go in screaming at them. So why would I go into, like, if I'm investigating a prison, why would I go in and cuss and swear at inmates if I wouldn't have done that when they were alive?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, we will provoke, I don't like the term provoke, but I've heard people use it in a sense in some of what we do.
How about entice?
If we know we're, well, like at Wellington, taking a train watch and a railroad watch and a whistle and children's toys, not to create anger, but to bring something familiar to help facilitate communication.
To interact. Yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that.
Wear your period clothing.
Exactly. If I'm doing something in a place that dates to the right period, a lot of time, part of the investigation, I'll wear my tour outfit, which is 1860s. It's, you know, clothing. It's modern made by experts in the field, but, you know, it's not 150 years old, but so I can actually wear it without worrying too much. But they recognize me sometimes a little bit better and are more willing to talk to me. I have an undergrad degree in history. I won't say I'm an expert in history of any sorts. I'm not. But I have a little bit of an understanding and kind of what was going on at different times sometimes. And you get an idea of how to approach and respect, you know, little things like that.
Yeah, right. Sure.
It just sort of helps.
And
I try to go in with a sense of compassion and try to have a little understanding. And again, with the history, you don't judge the past. Some of the stories and the tours aren't that great either. And it's easy to be judgmental, but you can't do that.
People do what they do.
Literally, exactly.
Do what they do, and people who have died did what they did. And if they knew better, they would have done something better, but it's what they do. So you're absolutely right. Yes.
Yeah, and you have to put it all into the perspective of the time and the whole bit. And so my job isn't to be judge and or jury. I have enough trouble with myself. I can't judge somebody else, especially somebody that's been dead for 100 years.
Yep. Hey, right. William? Our lovely producer just reminded us that we were supposed to have gone to break like 15 minutes ago, but, you know, we've been so into the conversation. So let's do this. We'll go to break, and we will come back and continue our discussion in just a minute. It's Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. Stick around.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hey, this is Kate Pearson from the B-52s for Red. Getting drunk is your own business, but when you drive drunk, you make it everybody's business. Don't drink and drive. Be responsible, plan ahead, and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you. Love Shack, baby, Love Shack. Love
Shack. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Your assignment is to listen to the buzz
on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ZTalk. Well, you knew that already. And again, we are your hosts, Karen and Rick. And, you know, would they be here if they didn't know it was ZTalk Radio? So I don't even know why I say that.
Because we still because that is the professional radio person thing to do.
Sure, of course. Yeah. So again, we're talking to William Becker. He's come back and he's joined us again, and he stuck around for a whole hour. So, you know, William, thanks for sticking around.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yes. So, Oregon City is sort of your stomping grounds, and I was hoping that you would just talk about some of the really haunted places there, because when I was there, here's what I discovered. You had the wonderful Oregon Ghost Conference here. What was it, like February, March?
It was March 9th, 10th, and 11th. And
that's right.
I'm working on the dates for next year, and I think it's going to be, again, that I'm shooting for that second weekend in March again.
So much fun. Great conference.
Oh, thank you.
But what I discovered in Oregon City is this. There is not a frickin' place in that town I could go to get away from all the yammering ghosts. They all wanted to talk to me.
I know.
You know what? I do have a quick question about that, William. Okay. Do you think that they bother Karen like that and they want to keep talking to her because they're like, oh my God, there's somebody here who can see me and listen to what I'm trying to say? Do you think that's like exciting for a spirit?
for a lot of them, especially those that aren't getting a lot of attention in normal.
Yes, I had actually had a little girl that at a place that we have investigated regularly, and I was there, and she came up, and she asked me where William was, and I said, well, he's not here. I said, why do you want to talk to William? She said, because he can see me.
Oh, that's so cute, but it's so sad at the same time that, you know, she's probably been dead for 1,000 years, but that's so cute.
Yeah, you know, it makes me feel good. It warms my heart when Karen told me that. It made my day. Because they're real, too. So, Oregon City, you know, the joke was, what isn't haunted? Is there anything not haunted? The level of, you know, apparition you want to talk to. Oh, by the way, one of the people did give an EVP. We did an investigation tours on Friday night and Saturday night of the conference, and David got an EVP in the Pioneer Center where we held the conference.
Oh, I'm sure, because that guy wanted me to see his house and car really badly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah.
So,
Who's that talking in the background?
I understood what it is.
I think William's outside, so you probably hear people walk up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I am sorry. I get better cell phone reception outside, so, and it's apartments. So,
and it's a beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Oregon City is the oldest incorporated city west of the Mississippi River. And it was the first territorial capital of what is now Oregon, Washington, Idaho, chunk of Montana, a piece of Wyoming, and actually Northern California. San Francisco's charter was filed there. The plot map is still there, in part because Oregon City is so hilly like they are, and partly because we were the power center.
Sure.
The mill in Oregon City, until it closed, don't get me into that subject, about a year ago, was the oldest continually operating industrial site in the state. Dr. McLaughlin built his first mill there in 1832. And it wasn't a fun place to grow up. I still don't want to live there. It's some wonderful people in town. The history is amazing. I love giving tours. It's kind of
it has a vertical street.
Yeah, it has an elevator, which is haunted. Both at the top and the bottom and in between.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. They're sweet dogs.
He's barking at the teenager because he freaks him out. Yeah. Anyway.
Go figure. And, you know, Tanner's not somebody I'd feel freaked out by.
No, I know. He just doesn't like any teenager, so that makes it really, his life is very miserable.
Yep. Yeah. You usually have a house full of them, either living or not living.
We have, lots of teens and kids in this house.
Yeah. And so, you know, we have tunnels that went under the courthouse where they smuggled out the booze during Prohibition down to the steamboat docks, you know, under the courthouse. And the sheriff's probably got their cut.
Oh, of course. That's how it was here in Chicago. City.
Yeah. Actually, I'll be vague enough about names. I told a friend of mine about 3 years ago some of the stuff going on in Oregon City politics, just that I was seeing in the regular open to the public city commission meetings. And this woman and I were having coffee, and her husband had been an attorney general at one point in one of the states in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh my God, it sounds like a mini Chicago. Somebody knew her way around the block about this stuff. She lived with it, you know.
It's par for the course that this city's dirty, man. That's just how it's been since day one.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so much of, actually, that's part of what we talk about on the tours. We had the first woman murderer in the territory. The men that were turned over by the Cayuse tribe to be held accountable for the Whitman massacre in Walla Walla, Washington, since Oregon City was the capital. All the negotiations came from there. The captives were released there. The people that were held for trial were there. They were executed there. They were innocent. You know, there's an awful lot there. Shoot, even in my lifetime, the Willamette River flows right through town. That's why the city actually got started. There's a big waterfall there, second largest in North America by volume. Niagara Falls is the only one that's bigger. And it's the site of the first long-distance power transmission in the country from Oregon City to Portland because of that falls. You know, it's a series of firsts and a lot of the other things that go with it. And part of the fun of the tours is we get to talk about the things that the city doesn't really like to have remembered.
Yeah.
But are important parts of history. You know, it's not for shock value or anything else. I'm an amateur historian. You don't whitewash history. You say it like it was. You put all of it out there to get a complete picture.
Right. You don't rewrite it for, like, political purposes and things, then.
Exactly. Or to make it look clean and inviting, or, you know.
Good to know.
So, and down at those tunnels, the tunnel and the docks, in the last couple of years or so, at least one of those places we've had experiences on the tour, just about every tour. Sometimes both. And we're having more experiences on the streets. We're smelling flowers when there's nothing around. Rocky was on one of my tours one night, and he saw movement in front of him, and I turned to look when he asked about it, and I saw a hand waving. So that was one time, and that wasn't psychic, that was visual. That was right on the street corner. It's just sort of, they like the attention, and it seems to be everywhere. There are a lot of stories I don't know yet. I'm working on them. And actually, there's a new place I want to add. It's a little Mexican restaurant in an old barbershop that was one of the big old ones of the day. It had, I think it was the first one with a steam boiler system or something for the towels and all that. And the guy that runs it now, he took pictures in the basement, and I didn't have time when I was there to really do a tour of the basement, but he took me down briefly, and he found an apparition in one of his pictures. He said he destroyed the picture because he didn't want to freak out his wife and son. But they also found a bed in kind of a boarded out part of the basement. And I heard about a week later that some of the prostitution in town was done in that basement in part of that area. So it makes you wonder.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Well, I can tell you the pizza place in town is haunted.
Oh, you bet. This place is right next to it.
Okay.
Different building, but right next door.
Okay. And that pizza place on the corner.
Uh-huh. And I would still love to get an investigation in there. I just haven't been able to. One of the owners is kind of interested, but they're wonderful people, and when I say it's my favorite restaurant in town, I say it because I mean it. And I've been there with people on the patio who have had their hair pulled and have had their clothes tugged on, and there's been nobody there that you could see.
Yeah.
I
was sitting in the front row listening to somebody talk at the conference. What was the name of the building again? I'm sorry.
The Pioneer Center.
The Pioneer Center, and somebody was dinking with my hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is that, I'm trying to think. That may have been a little boy, not a little girl.
Yeah, I don't know, but somebody, and then Ellen had the same thing in the same spot, I think, too, so, yeah.
Right. Well, there's a girl from the house across the street that sometimes comes over there. She especially is, she and Rocky have a long history. That's, you know, possibly her, but I'm getting a sense it's a boy, and I don't remember what we talked about at the time.
Yeah, I don't remember either. It's too many ghosts between then and now, you know what I mean?
I do. Well, and the building's haunted, and the one corner of it's built right over a grave.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore, but it was there for a long time.
And before
I... When I was a kid.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Before I knew that was where I was going to try and get away from all of it, was that corner.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, you were going to the most haunted part of the building, in a sense. So
I was. Yeah, I found that out. So, silly me. Live and learn.
And, you know, I don't remember, before they built the building, I don't remember if there was something else situated there or not, like, other than graves. I just don't remember. I remember as a kid always thinking how strange it was that there were these two graves here at the corner of a busy intersection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, then Rocky came back and told me, and I was like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah. In the woods there. But, you know, that's part of what we talk about on the tour, too, though. All the houses have been moved, most of them, even the ones on the area that has always been residential or farm. The graves have been moved, many of them. And, you know, everything just keeps following its path. Yeah. The one little boy we talk about on the tour a lot, he follows his whole background, you know, his whole playground, basically, which was a creek.
Mm-hmm. Is he the one that starts out down by on that landing? He's on the landing, and it hangs out underneath, like down by where the dock was by the river. Is he?
He hasn't ever been reported there, but he could. It could be that you picked him up there because he's seen along the riverbank. He's at the hotel, the Rivershore Hotel. He likes the Disney Channel and Nick at Night, or Nickelodeon.
Is he up
He'll
on
turn
the
turn on or the TVs or change the channels on the TVs to those programs.
So I have to tell you this. When we were down at the conference, William got room rates for the speakers at the it's called the Rivershore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the Rivershore Hotel. And so we got our room, and we had something in our room. As a matter of fact, I came down, I had been down hanging out with some friends and went upstairs, and Tanner said I had to go hang out on the balcony. There was something in the bathroom, you know, because it was bugging him. And so when I was checking out the next day, the gal at the front desk, she was like, oh, you were on the fourth floor. I won't even go up there.
They've seen apparitions walk through the walls up there. And
nice.
My room was right up there by where, but it was peaceful and quiet, you know. They never come to visit me in the hotel rooms.
Well, the guy in the bathroom just kind of came and went, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. He was taking a pee.
There's
and
a lot
stopped.
Of that path around, but you see, that hotel is located right by where the Abernathy House was built and where part of the Oregon Trail broke up. Abernathy Field is where the Oregon Trail ended. And that was anywhere from where the end of the Oregon Trail Museum used to be. The buildings are still there. They're shaped like big wagons.
Yeah.
To the river. John Abernathy owned all of that. And there were thousands, literally, of people that ended their migration there. And most of them weren't in that good a shape, and many of them had to spend a winter there. And the house is gone, but it was built right in that area. We're not exactly sure where, but somewhere
possibly in my bathroom.
Yeah, it's possible. And so it's, you know, it's actually right in that little park there is where we think the first state fair was held. And the park floods so every year, so they quit holding it there. And it was still a territorial fair.
See, now it's funny because people think that in the Pacific Northwest that we're a fairly young part of the country, so we don't have a lot of history. And I think what they there's not going to be that much haunting. And I think what they fail to realize is, okay, we're not England and we're not the East Coast with all of the old, you know, pioneer houses and things. But what we are is the Wild Wild West, and you know, that's a pretty big part of history too.
It is, and people also forget that, you know, North America, the Americas, were populated millennium after Europe and Asia and Africa, but we have had waves of people on this continent for about 14,000 years.
Right.
We had waves of people come over here that predated the current Native Americans. They were a later wave, not the first one. Kennewick Man, for example, they did the testing. He was not related to Native Americans. He was in a wave that came before them.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot here that's related to the earth, that's related to Native traditions. All around Oregon City, there were permanent camps, there were burial grounds, there were fishing camps, seasonal camps, all along part of the Clackamas River where it comes into the Willamette there, and along the shores of the Willamette. And up on that higher elevation, there was hunting. So there were people living a long time. And it's right. A very different feel than New England. The entities, the whole bit feels different. But the people came out here were a little different, too. Except sure. For maybe those that first came out to east, to the East Coast originally.
Right.
You had to have a certain amount of sense of adventure and often a certain amount of hopelessness of where you were for whatever reason to make that kind of a journey.
Sure.
That's true.
Yeah. My family made it, I know. And it has an effect on people for a long time afterwards.
Generations, yes.
Yeah.
Now, with this town having, so much activity in it, so many, apparitions, ghosts, what have you. Now, you oftentimes hear that it's like, well, they don't know that they're dead. That's why they're, sticking around. Is there any truth to that? I mean, do these people know that, hey, my current situation is that I'm breathing challenge right now?
I like the way you put that. I don't ever ask them.
Well, I look at Abigail, who said he can see me. She knows. She clearly knows she's dead.
Okay.
I think most of them, just the interaction I've had with them, I think most of them know. Okay. Is there a case occasionally? I mean, some people say there are, but they don't know. I don't know if they're reading it right or not. I haven't come up to anybody that's looked confused about that or said anything about it.
I know,
I think they usually know. But
that's why I think it's so funny all the pearl clutching about it's such a faux pas to tell them that they're dead or mention that they're dead. They frickin' know. Come on.
Yeah, I never really bought into that.
Look down. Where are your feet?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Can you open the door?
Especially
if
they're actually showing themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they know. Yeah. Maybe
could
every
really
once in a while.
You really walk through that well when you were alive. Especially when they're in houses and things that have been there the whole time they were there, not something that was built on top of it or changed.
I will say they don't always know that they are more than just the person they were in life, and they don't always know that they can move on. But I think they almost always know they're dead.
Yeah.
Now, what do you mean by move on? The ego part of that?
That's
left.
That's right. How about instead of move on, reintegrate with their whole selves, their soul.
Okay, so that
energy.
Part of their energy can go off. That would make sense to me. I've been reading the book you want me. That could make sense. That would make sense to me. I know people that talk a lot about clearing the souls or sending them on or whatever, and it always gives me a shudder and a shiver because it doesn't fit my experience, and it often makes a mess, and I'm not sure we have a right.
No, I agree. But you can have a conversation with them to find out what's keeping them here and say, and then tell them what might be out there for them otherwise, and then help them facilitate a choice. But I don't think you send anybody anywhere.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I left my old group, the group that I was with before, is because they were all about, spirit rescue. And it's like, I'm not here to rescue anybody. I'm here to see or try to prove that there is life after death. Some people, they don't want to move on because in the Western world, hey, you did something bad, you're going to hell. So that's what they believe.
And if it's a big energy imprint, like a movie or something, even if it's a certain amount of interaction, some of these things have been around for hundreds, thousands of years. I think that it's a permanent residual of that person, maybe. And some of what I've come across isn't human. It's not demonic.
But it's when you say it isn't human, here's what it is. It's something, it's a piece of spirit that has never incarnated as a human. That doesn't mean it's not still made of the same stuff as you and I. At our soul level, what it means is that it's somebody that's never incarnated as a human. It may even be somebody that's gotten so far away from the light that they don't remember that the light is there anymore. But that doesn't mean that they don't have that little piece of the light in them, and it doesn't mean that you can't maybe awaken some of that through your conversations with them.
Okay. And I hadn't thought about it quite like that, but, you know, I was thinking some of it are entities that are – I haven't come across anything that I see evil. And like I say, I'm open to proof, but somebody's going to have to work really hard to prove it to me. I've run into some nasty customers, but they haven't been evil.
No, they've been mean.
But but things like, I've been working on this with the whole idea of, well, like your paper and the overlap of quantum physics and string theory and different things.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these entities might be bleeding through from other dimensions. It could be, I'm beginning to get a better understanding of the, quote, mythical creatures and think maybe they aren't. And I've had two and maybe three experiences where I've seen, two where I've seen apparitions, and third one where it was more psychic, that I think were... non-human entities, and I'm using that word not to be prejudicial again about what they're made up of, but on the one investigation we were on up in Washington, I saw a tree spirit or a wood nymph or something, and the person I was with also, she agreed with me, our team leader, who knows this stuff pretty well. So it wasn't, you know, I sensed it, and then I saw her after that. In Port Gamble, I saw something very clearly with my eyes. I saw an entity. And after thinking about it, maybe it's the old idea of the dwarf or something. He wasn't, you know, wasn't super short and not super tall. But, I mean, it fits some of that. In a park in Oregon City, I saw something that looked like he was, and that was kind of half physical seeing and half psychic. He looked like he might be coming through or slightly through. He was very translucent from another dimension. And somebody who could have fit the idea of one of these other people. So that's what I mean. And I don't know. These are beings I would like to develop the ability to communicate with fairly regularly. And, you know, not having it be a fleeting flash here and there, but get to know more about what's there. And some of that's just me being surprised and not following through, and some of it just not making the connection enough yet.
Well, so, you know, here's the thing, is that people talk about non-human entities like, oh my God, they've never been human. Well, I with five non-human entities that I'm pretty sure never have been human.
Okay, too.
You know, and... animals are a different kind of spirit. That doesn't mean that we're all not made of the same stuff at the very basis of the universe. It just means that we take different forms. We you know, serve different purposes. And so if there are things like tree spirits or sprites or gnomes or whatever it is, you know, that's just another piece of this universe that we don't understand.
Exactly, and when I say non-human, I say it just to be descriptive, and it's absolutely not meant to be prejudicial or judgmental. I'm not putting any particular entity form on a higher level than another one, and I'm certainly not putting the human race up there at the top. I've lived on this planet too long to do that, at least, you know, how we manifest it.
Oh, absolutely.
I
want to be clear.
Any day.
Pardon me?
I said I'll take my dogs over people any day.
A lot of times. You know, I'm only half joking when I say the dead are easier to get along with than the living. And there are lots of exceptions to that on both sides. But, you know, sometimes it can be. And I think in part because the dead often aren't as multidimensional as the living are. not always, but often are. But, yeah, I don't ever want to come across that I'm being judgmental.
You're like the least judgmental person I know. It's fine. It's
yeah.
Okay. Oh, thank you. But I really appreciate the clarifications that you bring up, Karen. So,
yeah, no worries.
It's interesting learning a new language.
Yes.
And in a sense, that's what we've tried to do with this. I don't use the word ghost very often because of all the connotations.
Ghost is a sensationalist term. It's the sensationalistic part of, you know.
Yeah, but it's also a term that's been used for hundreds of years, maybe even thousands of years. So has it always been sensational, or is it just a word that's been sensationalized?
No, we've recently sensationalized it.
Yeah.
Ghost. Yeah.
In Christian theology, it's been pretty much a fear term. That's why the Catholic Church in so many places quit using, you know, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost.
It's the Holy Spirit. That's right.
Because ghost had a negative connotation. It doesn't imply what the Spirit really is, what they're talking about. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just realized what time it is. So, William, it's remind me of your websites.
ParanormalInsights.net.
Okay. And NorthwestGhostTours.com?
Yep. And on NorthwestGhostTours.com, they also have the information for the Teddy Bear Parade and Pioneer Family Festival that's coming up on the 18th, 19th, and 20th. And they're good causes. They raise money for youth programs, and they bring in teddy bears for first responders to give to kids, and elderly, too, sometimes. And yeah. So if anybody's going to be in the area, they're fun and they're free to watch. And, you know, you go to a festival, if you want to eat or participate in the rides, you pay. But if you want to watch and see the vendors and the booths and anything else and have a nice day in the park, it doesn't have to cost a penny.
Sounds very good. Okay, William, as always, it's great to talk to you on the show.
Yes, thank you, William.
I talk to you all the time off the show. So,
thank you. I've had a blast, and it's time flies. I appreciate it.
Oh, and William has his own radio show. If you enjoy listening to him here, you can listen to him on the Sepia Network, SEPIA.com. Is that right?
Right. And the producer of my show has been in the hospital for 2 weeks. He's home now, just caught. He's slowly getting up and running, and so I hope maybe a week from tomorrow my show might be on again.
And that's Friday nights at
7 o'clock Pacific, 10 o'clock Eastern.
Okay, very good. So, William Becker, thank you so much.
Thank you, William.
You're welcome. Thank you both very much. I really appreciate it.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, so, Cheryl, what did you say we have coming up next week?
Next week, we actually are not having a show. We're going to be off next week.
Oh, get the week off. Yeah. Woo!
Yay. So, but the following week, we'll be back. And we will be talking, that's on May 24th, we'll be talking to Jackie Klebe of Paranormal Phenomenon Investigators.
Phenomenon. It's going to be a long show, Rick.
Yeah.
Just say PPI. That sounds good.
Yeah, we may have to, because otherwise, you know.
Right. Yeah. And then the week after, the 31st, we'll have Mike Roberts, founder and lead investigator for Research Paranormal and CEO of Demented Entertainment.
Demented, very good. Yes.
So that's what's upcoming.
Oh, and we're kicking around ideas for new segments on the show. So
we are.
You know, that's right. And also, I just wanted to remind everybody, the weekend of the 25th, Memorial Day weekend, is Crypticon Seattle. It's up like around the SeaTac area of Seattle. If you go to CrypticonSeattle.com or SeattleCrypticon.com or just Google Crypticon Seattle, you'll find it. I am moderating a panel on Friday night. I'll be sitting on a Ouija board panel Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I
Parker
hope
Brothers.
That. Yeah. And here's the thing about Crypticon that's so awesome. This is the first year that they have the paranormal aspect to it. Crypticon is a horror movie festival. There's people doing horror movie makeup and there's like people from horror movies. As a matter of fact, the scariest character from the, okay, you know how I say movies don't scare me anymore? The last movie that scared the bejesus out of me was Phantasm back in the 70s when the guy comes out of the mirror at the end and goes, boy, well, guess what? He's going to be at Crypticon and I'm going to stay as far away from him as humanly possible because I'm afraid of him. And I think the guy that does, like...
I can't believe that guy's still alive.
You know the guy with all the needles in his face out from Hellraiser?
Yeah.
I think it's... he's going to be there.
Pinhead.
Pinhead, there you go.
D. Wallace from E.T. is going to be there.
Wow, awesome.
I know. So I'm going to be avoiding the scary guy from the mirror. I'm going to stay away from mirrors, but I will be at Crypticon, and I hope that you'll come up and support it because it's just a really neat festival. So, anything else, anybody?
I just want to say thanks to William, and I hope the listeners stay tuned to the next show, Fox City's Paranormal Radio.
Excellent. All right. That's all. So, not next week, but the week after, we will be back. It'll be 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. Until then, this is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.